credit paying Ramosa finds the target. Swinton it was. There's a little short kick from Hodge, who gets the bounce. It's there for Banks. He flicks it out the back door, and a try on debut for Tom Wright. What a start, Australia!
Welcome to another episode of Rugby Fixation. This week, we're going to continue our Super Rugby Pacific previews by looking at two of the most exciting teams in the competition. And you might be saying, hey, he's been saying that about nearly every team that we've been talking about. What is Rev going on about? That's because these are exciting teams. This is an exciting competition. And there's so much to look forward to, despite the fact that I've just referred to myself as my own nickname. So to help me break down the Waratahs and Highlanders is my brother and co-host, Curdy. How are you doing? And surely you're excited because we're talking about your team.
Yeah, I think we might just use the 49 of the 50 minutes for this one on the Tars and round out the Highlanders with a quick 23 at the end. But very excited. It's getting closer and closer. We've both got some Tars kit on. Not that this will probably go too far video-wise, but it's looking good to see Mitch, the convert, in sky blue today as well.
Yeah, I will make sure that there's some sort of snippet of something out on the socials, just so there can be proof. I'm in the sky blue on a pretty rare occasion. I will support the Waratahs when the Reds aren't playing, but also I'll just support any team where I get the kit. So if any Force fans want to send me a jersey, go for it. I'll back the
That's
West.
That's the second time you've asked for that now, I think.
I think it is.
Deffy is the first time you asked it.
Yeah, it's surprising when you just throw it out into the void and hear just echoes of silence. I was like, gee, that's funny. Yeah, I thought crickets. For sure they'd want some representation here. But look, as you say, we will probably dedicate a decent chunk of that start to the Waratahs because we are quite excited. They've got a host of changes. Some of them are really exciting, but also they did have a shocking 2021. And it's worthwhile diving into that and seeing, you know, what's going to happen, how they can change to try and better their favours in 2022. So we will start as we always do, but just to recap for those that haven't done any listening for the previous podcast, we go through the teams and look at how they went in 2021, the ins and outs of the squad, which player we're looking out for, who leaves the biggest hole if there's an injury, our ideal 23. So the 23 we want to see, not necessarily the 23 that will get named, as well as their predicted finish on the ladder. And we do try and wrap that up with three draft picks from the team as well. Surprisingly, the Waratahs actually have quite a few that rank quite highly. So it'll be good to get into the nuts and bolts of that. But let's dive in. 2021, we touched on it before, 0 from 13 wins. Easily the worst record of any super team in the competition last year. Next closest was Rebels, but even they squeaked in 3 and had a few more bonus point losses along the way. Curdy, obviously not a good year or an acceptable year by Waratahs standards, but as a fan, were there parts of the season that you did like?
Oh, yeah, every time the sky blue runs out onto the field, you love it. And there's, I mean, this season was off to a phenomenal start. We touched on it last week, I think, with the first minute try or second minute try against the Reds. That's a great standard for what the rest of the season was going to look like. And then injuries and bad luck and everyone else cursing the Waratahs just brought us down. But no, it's a much more exciting season this year. Rob Penny didn't last too long. Probably not a lot of it was his fault, but very excited about Darren Coleman, and even more so after listening to, you'd give the shout out to whatever the podcast name was, but the one that you followed me on, Darren Coleman, sounds like a great guy, great coach, great culture in coming to the Tars. And then obviously the return of His Holiness, Michael Hooper, as well as some other big names across the park that we'll touch on soon. So a lot more to look forward to this year. I did not think last year was going to be as dire as it was, but onwards and upwards, quickly forgotten.
Yep. One of the things that probably could be looked at is the Trans-Tasman competition. I wouldn't say the defense necessarily got any better. There were still some pretty big losses, but it looked like the attack got a lot better. It seemed as if the combination of, you know, Donaldson and Harrison having two playmakers out there, but also the center combination of Fichetti and Parisi helped them a fair bit. Is that one of the areas you think that you can be quite excited for as a Waratahs fan? The backline does look to have a few sort of key cogs that are gelling.
Yeah, and we'll get to it more, but I mean, Parisi is probably one of the most exciting players in world rugby last year, even. So he made a massive mark. We always knew he had talent from his days at the Reds. Took a while to get him in the right colours, but he was phenomenal, and he made sort of laughing stock of some Kiwi defenders as well, which is when you know that you're not just knocking about and beating maybe someone who's got a bit less experience, a few less caps under their belt in an Australian Super Rugby side. But he was running over the Kiwis like it was nothing in Trans-Tasman. Him and Piketty made a great partnership, both Wallaby centres now, and they will have some better front foot ball to go off this year, I think, with the forward pack looking a little bit stronger. And a fit Jake Gordon for the vast majority of the season, and inside backs with a few more caps under the belt and a few better combinations developed there. So definitely a lot to look forward to with Fichetti and Parisi in particular as the key strike weapons.
Yeah, it's probably one of the key things. And we'll look at it as we get to the 23, but just as you say, a few more caps under the belt, the Waratahs are still going to be the least experienced Super Rugby side this year, at least out of the Australian and New Zealand teams, because obviously Drua and Pacifica haven't played Super Rugby in the competition before. But I mean, they've still got two centurions in Michael Hooper and Tetra Faulkner in their 23, and they're still ranking last for average cap. So it does show really how inexperienced the rest of the team is. And I'm very keen to see them sort of build on that. I think they definitely have flavours of sort of 2018, 2019 Reds, and can build quite nicely if given the time. But let's look at the team itself, because it's gone through quite a few changes. We might deal with the outs first. They lost six props. And when we say six props, obviously that seems, you know, like the whole squad's worth. They had a bit of an injury crisis last year and did have to call upon a fair few Shoot, Shield and Hospital Cup players. But Darcy Breen, Pat Cowan, George Francis, Chris Talakai, we've also got Totola and Fafita as well. We've got, you know, six props in there that have, you know, left the squad, as well as Andrew Tuala, who was a hooker, but also was sort of getting morphed into a prop as well, just as they were getting desperate. So the front row stocks have really taken a hit. When you throw into the mix Robbie Abel and Joe Cotton, that's a lot of the front row stocks to have left. And the fact that they only named two hookers in their squad is a very interesting sign. But I think not too many big losses there in terms of experience, outside of obviously Pat Cowan, who was experienced, and Robbie Abel, who had a bit to offer. On top of them, they lost four of their locks. Sam Caird, Jack Whedon, Michael Wood, and Sam Wykes. So we're most of the way through the list, and we've only lost tight five players so far. Joining them are Jack Dempsey in the back row, Tempai Maroa, one of the centres, James Turner, and Jack Maddox. So two of the outside backs as well. Cody, massive list of players to have left, and a bit of a shame when you think that a few of those names were only new to the Waratahs in 2021. So the fact they only stayed for a season isn't the best indictment. What are your thoughts on that list of outs, and who's the biggest name that the Waratahs are going to miss?
Yeah, first thoughts are what a waste of a year of second rowers. Sam Kerr, Jack Whedon, Sam Wykes all signed for 1 year and all only on 1 year contracts, all left. Sam Wykes probably played maybe less than 200 minutes across the year. Sam Kerr was decent, developing into quite a good player. Had a much better Trans-Tasman than Super Rugby AU, and Whetton was probably underwhelming given how good he was in the Highlanders in 2020. And so that, in hindsight, would have been great for Jeremy Williams and Max Douglas to get some more time. Just probably, I'd rather have just them had a full year last year. I think all positions that we've lost someone, so key position that we've probably will put, key person will probably miss is Maddox, because he's not replaced that well. Dempsey was obviously phenomenal last year, and he's been phenomenal for Glasgow, and he's always been a great Waratah, and him and Pete Zalmer sort of had that battle for a while for fringe Wallaby. He had some great games in gold as well, so I really miss watching him play. Great entertaining player, but we're much better covered in the back row, so he's less of a loss to the team, but Maddox will be sorely missed at the back with no sort of genuine fullback and experienced fullback. Maddox probably had over 50 caps for Super Rugby as well. So that was an experienced player that albeit not so consistent, but knew how to finish a try and sort of I think he did probably give a bit more and looked a bit more interested last year than he did a couple of years ago at the Rebels.
Yeah, it was a shame because you kind of saw him just really build into form, I thought. And there was a number of times where he took the line so well and you thought, gee, if they can inject him properly, he's a really damaging player. So I do agree there. I think Maddox is the biggest loss. But there's a few ins that are exciting. And I think we've probably got enough scope there to see some improvement, especially with probably one of the key names. But we'll get to him now. But in the forwards, we're going to be boosted by Archer Holtz, Ruben Smith, Hugh Bokenham, Ned Hannigan, Jed Holloway, Langie Gleeson, Michael Hooper, and then a few backs coming in, two of which into the wider squad, Mosesi Tuipulotu and Dylan Peach, as well as Tevita Funa from the NRL. So an interesting mix of players. Clearly, there's one big name there in Michael Hooper. I mean, any team that gets, you know, the best Wallabies player is going to get a significant boost. But how impactful is the return of Hooper to this team? And who's the next biggest inclusion?
Probably can't be undersold how impactful that is. Like, he's been the best Waratah since he started. Maybe you could argue for hours for a couple of years in terms of his impact, but he's phenomenal. You can see in a Wallabies team that you could probably say they might have lost 3-0 against France if it wasn't for Hooper. And he was the best over the spring tour, or the ordinations as well. So he's phenomenal. It's great to have a leader as experienced as him as well when there's a new coach in town. And it sounds like the relationship between him and Darren Coleman's got off to a great start. So I think that's really important, especially when you've got, like, for example, two young second rowers in Jeremy Williams and Max Douglas in front of him. So I think that's going to be really good for their development to have a person who's packed down behind some great second rowers in his time and probably been in about, at least 250 professional scrums. So
yeah,
probably getting on past 300. So I think that's going to be really important. Outside of that, it's quite interesting. I think I'm very excited to see Hannigan back. But this is the conversation that we'll get to in the 23 where you wonder what he's come back for. Same with Holloway. We're both sort of fringe 6-8 second rowers, or Holloway 8 and second rower, and Hannigan a 6 and second rower. So I'll be keen to see how they fit in with such young second rowers there, or will be Jeremy Williams and Max Douglas. So I'm very keen to see that. But Hannigan was in the form of his life before he moved over. Had, from what I've heard and seen in small doses, a pretty good time in Japan. And Holloway, I think, is probably needed a bit of a break from the Waratahs. He'd been there or thereabouts there for a long time. Wasn't getting any love from Australian rugby. Had a little bit of a break. Probably good to have a bit of a reset. And I think he'll come back a bit more motivated. But yeah, would have helped to have a few more outside backs coming in to replace Maddox, but unfortunately not to be this year.
I think one of the things just touched on there, and sort of mentioned with the outs as well, the locks have taken a massive hit. Obviously we lost a few of those and just, you know, don't have really many available options to use this year. And it's the position that I'm still a little bit concerned about, because Hugh Bokenham's come into the squad as, you know, a proper replacement. I haven't seen much of him play. And then Jeremy Williams, interestingly, is in the wider squad, at least based off some of the reports. So it does seem like an interesting sort of position for him to be, that he's not, you know, as likely for game time. Because when I look outside of that, Ned Hannigan's going to be in Japan for quite a while still. And I think the Tars have been a little guilty, and it worked for them in 2014, but they've been a little guilty of having, I guess, players that aren't necessarily genuine locks in there. And you touched on it already. Holloway, I think, can do a serviceable job there. You know, he's quite tall and he's, you know, got quite a bit of motor. But they were using a lot of Hugh Sinclair there last year, and I think he could still get a bit of a chance at lock this year. I like his work rate, but he doesn't have the size, I don't think, for a Super Rugby lock. So I really do hope that, I mean, firstly, that Holloway comes back in some good form. Secondly, that Douglas can sort of hit the ground running, because he had a pretty good 2021, especially by the end of the year. But it really is one of the positions, and it got spoken about on the Pick and Drive podcast where we talked about the Waratahs. If you could sign any player to the team, it'd be Rory Arnold, hands down. Like, he just would add so much instantly to this team. And you just get the feeling that that would instantly make that forward pack go from, yeah, it's all right for super level, to really top contender. With that being said, let's get into our 23, and then we can have a look at a player to look out for in an injury hole afterwards. But I think a fair few of the positions will be pretty straightforward. The interesting conversation will be around some of the outside back positions. So to start with, I've got a tight five of Angus Bell, Dave Parecki, Harry Johnson-Holmes, Max Douglas, and Jed Holloway. Is there any cause for concern or any need to change any of those guys, Kirby?
Oh, I think not to start with. I couldn't really tell too much of a difference between Douglas and Williams last year in terms of performance. They're both too small for the game last year. I hope they've put on a bit of size this year. And neither of them were too instrumental in the line-out. So I'm relatively indifferent on them at the moment, but if there's hints that that Douglas is going to be full-time and Williams is sort of wider training squad, then I probably lean towards him, and I'll hopefully replace by Hannigan when he gets home.
Yeah, that is one of the key things. It has been commented on Twitter as well when I put out one of the team lists. Hannigan would be starting for me if he were available at the start of the season. So we'll see how the Japan season sort of ends and where the Mighty Water Gush finish up, because that'll be his team sort of done for the year, you'd think. For the back row, I've opted for Swinton, Hooper, and relative newcomer Raboni Warren-Vossiako. I think the big contention, I think Swinton and Hooper as Wallabies are pretty locked in. There is a bit of debate about whether it should be Warren-Vossiako, who had the time with the Sunwolves and a few games last year, is quite experienced and quite a big distributing back rower, or whether you go for the youth in Will Harris, who was the number eight at the same time Harry Wilson was in the under-20s team and obviously has the ability to sort of mix it with that sort of level. So I'm opting for the experience, but Cody, do you want your eggs in the Harris basket? Are you happy to see Raboni have another crack?
Yeah, I'd go Will Harris to start at eight this year because he was very good last year. I thought him and Dempsey actually had a really good combination in terms of work rate, and they sort of seemed to split up the sort of in the middle work and then also a bit of time in space, and Harris did well with both, and he's always been a contender with Harry Wilson all through juniors and not pushed into blindside, so he could play eight in obviously odd under 20s when they nearly won the whole thing, so I'm excited by him, and he's sort of that bloke that seems like he's going to be a future Waratahs captain if he stays around. He's had leadership roles in Oz under 20s, and he's looking like he's a good club man, and he'd be one to keep around. And then Vossiako for impact off the bench, and maybe you just put six forwards on the bench if he's one of your bench options as well. So probably covers that a bit.
That's definitely one of the things that Waratahs could use to their, I guess, benefit, just in that Vossiako has played and started both at 8 and 12. So given there aren't that many centre options at the Waratahs with Joey Walton injured, just having him as an option in the 23 definitely seems like a pretty handy thing to do. The back line will go through. Most positions speak for themselves, but there is at least a little bit of debate. So I've gone for Gordon and Harrison. That's presuming that Harrison comes back from injury. Otherwise, we'll probably see Ben Donaldson there. In the centres, I've gone Lalakai Fekete and Isaiah Parisi, with Mark Nwanganyi-Tawase on the left wing, James Ram on the right, and Tevita Funa at fullback. Big question marks over, I think, the wings and fullback position, just because a lot of them can cover both. Newsom obviously has quite a bit of experience at the club and is probably pushing for one of the spots. It's a really sort of interesting thing to try and manoeuvre around and piece together. But what's your make of that backline, Cody? Who would you be naming?
Yeah, I'd be keeping Gordon Harrison for Kelly Parisi as the sort of 9, 10, 12, 13. And then in terms of outside backs, I'd put Donaldson at 15 and then have Nwanganyi-Tawase and Ram on the wings. It is, I guess, contrary to Darren Coleman's most recent sort of discussions where he's not looking to have sort of a box kick heavy game, doesn't need tall wingers, which Ram and Nwanganyi Norgadi Waziar, but I haven't seen enough of Funa to know whether he's going to be sort of an impactful player just yet. And by having Donaldson start, you bring Edmund onto the bench as well, who's a really exciting player. And if you do use Vosiako, say if you do have a 5-3 split, you know, Vosiako on the bench as a back rower, and then Edmund on as a reserve sort of 10-12 cover, which is very exciting for a second half.
Yeah, I think that's one of the luxuries the Waratahs have, is having three fly halves that you'd kind of be happy with any of them starting. It's a nice position to be in, and it's one of the ones where I'm very keen to see how they sort of develop over the season. What I'd really like is for all three to be healthy and available round one, just so we can sort of get a feel for who's going to be in which position and if they can just build a combination there. Because the Donaldson-Harrison combination really only came about because of injury, and the form of both was kind of too good to leave one out. So it created a bit of a nice headache for the team. And I'd like them to start the season without that headache and just, you know, get everyone, I guess, in their preferred position according to DC. Going through the bench, again, we touched on it before, there's not really another option for hooker, but Tom Horden, but he was today modelling the Waratahs jersey, and it was looking pretty good, so I don't mind him being back there. Tetra Faulkner for a bit of experience, Tian Takapulu for a bit of size. You could put Ruan Smith in there just because he's got the experience and, you know, has been around the traps. I think he's the first player to have played at all five Super Rugby sides in Australia, which is a pretty cool feat. Just for experience, I've opted for Hugh Sinclair as the reserve lock, despite saying before how I don't think he's really fit for it. He does offer that coverage if we can get a full game out of Douglas and Holloway. Harris was my reserve back row, but again, you'd swap that with Warren Vasayako. Jack Grant, the reserve nine. I've got Donaldson on the bench. And the outside back I'm excited by is Dylan Peach, just because he was in the Aussie Sevens program and looked really damaging, really exciting. There's not that many backs in the squad, so surely he gets a game time at some point. I don't think he's in line to be in the first 23, but he's someone that excites me, so I'm going to put him in there just for my own selfish reasons. How far off is that bench from your thinking, Cody, other than the back rowers?
Yeah, I'd probably mix it around a bit to have... I'd probably have Ruan Smith there first. Yeah. I'm not sold on Sinclair, despite him sort of doing pretty well last year, all things considered, as a second row. Loves footy, obviously, but I don't think there's a super long future for him at the Tars. So I'm sort of happy for him to be one season and done. I'd be obviously starting Harris of Osiako on the bench for the back row. Grant, I hope he's improved on last year, and I really hope Gordon doesn't get injured, because that's a massive change. But he got a lot of game time last year. It's better for him now. But I think that's, we definitely benefit from having another nine there coming in and sort of putting a bit of pressure on Grant, I think. And then with Donaldson starting, probably Funa on the bench and Edmund rounding out.
Yep, nice. I think there's so many exciting options in the team. They nearly can't go wrong. Nearly. I still think there's a few players that I really want to see them sort of building towards the future. So I know I put Sinclair on the bench. If Williams can sort of step up to that level, then it'd be great. I don't really want to see them use Newsome, just because I don't think that he's going to add to the team what the others could in an attack sense. And he didn't have the best defensive season last year either. I think he probably doesn't fit Coleman's view of wanting to spread the ball around a bit and play quickly. So I hope they can work around that and piece together this team. But the Waratahs team is really exciting. And the player that I'm looking at for most is Harry Johnson-Holmes. I think, you know, we're talking about spreading the ball. He's got great hands for a forward. And every week he's probably top two or three. It's normally him and Bell and one other in terms of the tackles made, the amount of carries. Like, he loves getting involved in all the dirty work. I think he's a really good fit to sort of fight it out with Tom Robertson as that fifth prop that you'd probably take on a World Cup squad if they're only taking five, just because the ability to cover one and three, but in particular his improvement at tight head. I think with another full season packing down with Bell and Pericke, he's probably in for a really nice 2022. Cody, who are you looking out for this year?
Just to add to that first, I thought, yeah, HJH is very unlucky to not to not get picked over Pone if I'm silly. I think they like Pone's size, and I don't know. I assume that they're based selections of highlights reels, but HOH was a lot better last year than Pone. So I hope he gets rewarded for how impactful he's been over the last couple of years, and I hope he has another massive year. But I think Parecki I'm most keen to see, because we didn't see enough of him last year. He's quite skillful around, like, ball in hand. He spent time in the UK. He spent time back in Australia. He's, clean throw. I don't know. I'm keen to see more of him, because I would love to see a Waratahs who got back in the Wallabies contention again. And he got pretty poorly, injured in pretty poor time last year to sort of rule him out of contention there. So I think it's a position that we need to develop. Horton and him, one of them needs to stand up and ideally not get injured, either of them. So fingers crossed he goes well. But then obviously Parisi's the one to watch, because we need someone to break the line, because we've got a small pack, small back line really as well. So we need someone to get through the groundwork and get over that ad line.
You have really wanted a Waratahs hooker for a while. I can see just on your bicep how you got the Phil Kearns. You got, who's that next to him? Tatafu Plotter now.
TPN,
Yeah. And there's Tolu Latu etched in there as well with a little line through it. So that's...
Yeah, bring back Tolu.
Yeah. So I actually agree. I think Dave Parecki and Alex Murphy are in a bit of a two-horse race to overtake someone for that third hooking jersey in the Wallabies. I think they're both really high-caliber players, so I'd be very keen to see them sort of, lock horns this year and really stick it to the other teams and the other players that have made it into the squad so far. Really exciting team, but who's the most important in terms of injury? For you and I, we did have Hooper on the list, but I'd cross him off because I actually think, while he's really important to the team, Carlo Tozzano did such a good job at seven last year, and it is a bit of a disservice to him, and it is meant as no disrespect, but as good as his form is, he's not going to keep out Hooper from the jersey if available. So who leaves the biggest hole if there's an injury, Curdy?
I think Gordon easily. Saw it last year. It was bigger last year because he was captain and there was no other real leader in the team, the sort of super experienced player. Next most cap was probably HJH and Maddox, I would have thought, at the time. Maybe Sam Wykes, if he was on, a bit of time in the sun. But yeah, so that was a real massive turning point. I think he had, 4 weeks off last year at the same time when Parisi, our main attacking threat, had some time off as well. So I think if Gordon goes down and we're Jack Grant playing for, 80? I think he's playing for 80 minutes most of the time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So, I don't think that's something that will help the team too much. So, no disrespect to Grant, but Gordon is one hell of a lot better.
I think, I don't have the full numbers in front of me, but just as you said that, Gordon was the only player last year, I think, other than Jack Dempsey, that had over 50 Super Rugby caps. For their first starting team, for that to be, the team put out, it does sort of speak to the level of, inexperience in the side. It was handy having players like Tetra Faulkner and Sam Wykes in the squad, but they weren't playing big minutes or anything like that. So as long as if they were really adding their experience to the side on game day all that much, they might have been useful for trainings, but... I think this year they really want to try and add the caps to that starting team, just try and build that base so that they've got, a little bit more to work with come 2023. And that probably leads us to our positioning for the team. As excited as we are, I think we can rule out a inaugural Super Rugby Pacific Championship for the Waratahs. It does seem a bit of a bridge too far, but I'll explain myself first, because I've put them in eighth, which is probably a little higher than people would think, especially as a Reds fan, talking about a team that didn't win a match last year. But I think three bonus point losses last year, you add Hooper, that's nearly instantly three wins, just with what he brings to the team. But more importantly than that, I think some of the key combinations are just that bit better. For Super Rugby AU in particular, I think there was only three matches where we had Fichetti at 12 and Parisi at 13. that combination has been built upon now. And the fact that they're both Wallabies, you really hope that they can have a full season together without injury interruption. But on top of that, when you look at the best players for the team last year, Bell and HJH, they both had time sidelined with injuries. Jake Gordon missed a whole chunk of the season with injuries. They're really, you know, quite poorly hamstrung last year, and I think have a better team to put that together. So if they can sort of get some wins over Drua early on, get a win over Force or Rebels, you know, just once, that sort of puts them in the frame to get eighth. You don't need that many wins to make the finals this year. So
you glossed over our round two game, which should be an easy win.
Nah, I wouldn't imagine so. Hosting the Reds.
You've won once in Sydney in, what, 10 years?
I think the beauty of that matchup is we've just got so many players licking their lips knowing these are the easy beats. Let's give it to them. So if we lose, it might be because Brad Thorne's called me up to play. But I think other than that, pretty safe. You know, it's going to be a great season. I do think the Reds Waratahs rivalry will be a lot better this year because that was sort of the only games that they really got blown out of the water. I think the Reds were sort of making up for the 7 or 9 match losing streak, whatever it was. It was quite extensive.
11.
It wasn't up to 11, I don't think, was it?
It was at least double digits. Yeah, I think it got to 11.
Let's call it 3 just to be safe. So yeah, there was a lot of losses in a row for the Reds, and I think that does definitely play into that sort of redemption. The Waratahs will know that they can sort of get a few wins this season, but they're going to want to exact revenge for those results. But we've dragged on a bit with that.
We'll just need a tweet from you at the end on how many it was in a row, just to confirm it.
A tweet? Oh, yeah, I reckon we can do that. I'll have a Google now while you tell everyone what position you think the Waratahs will finish in 2022.
Now, I was thinking scrape into the 8 as well. Upon listening to your podcast this afternoon, running through the Force team, I think the Force's type 5 is just a bit better than the Tars, and I think probably a bit stronger depth. Looking at the size of the Tars pack running through it now, I think while we've got Hooper with superhuman strengths and Swinton, who's got some size and a great propping combo, I think we're probably 2 injuries off from not looking the best in some key positions. If you lose Gordon and say Bell, then you've got Faulkner, who's experienced and is probably won't play more than 50 minutes. And then some inexperience coming off the bench. So I think it'll be 8th or 9th for the Tars. And again, logic being above Drua Pacifica. And then I think hoping at least one of the Rebels or the Force. But yeah, so I'm hoping they can scrape in with the key differential being Hooper and Darren Coleman, who I'm quite excited by.
I will just chime in to say you were correct. It was 11 games, which I really wish I hadn't Googled. Because I thought it was a lot. I knew it was.
Did you say 7?
I thought it was. Well, when I first said 7, I'm like, no, that's too short. It must be 9. But 11, that's a long stretch.
Mm.
So I take it all back. Like, Reds, don't send over your B team. Just keep pummeling them. Try and even that ledger out a little bit. But
What have you got now? 2 in a row, or is it 3?
3, I think it must be. Because I think we won in 2020.
We beat you once in 2020. I think you won the first one, and we beat you the second time. So it's only 2.
Oh, yeah, it's only 2 in a row. Yeah. Well, let's keep that going then.
Which is hardly in a row, is it?
Yeah. our streak of 2. I will say the 4 and against is pretty good over those last 2, though.
No, we won this 4 and against.
We'll do a pod closer to the date when it's a Waratahs versus Reds, so it can really get into each other. But I think you're right there. And what you've highlighted is probably the difference between the Rebels, Force, and Waratahs. So at this point, we have recorded episodes for all 3 teams, and all 3 episodes would have been released by now. The Reds and Brumbies have really strong starting teams and some pretty good depth. Brumbies in particular have awesome depth. The Rebels, Force and Tars, their 15s really aren't that far behind the Brumbies or Reds, in my opinion. But when you look at the benches and when you look at the squad members behind them, that's where it dips a bit. So again, it's a long comp. The onus is just keeping everyone healthy. So nearly whichever team has the best sort of strength and conditioning and rehab and all that sort of stuff, They're going to be teams that flourish. But speaking of teams flourishing, let's get to the New Zealand side of this podcast. As has tended to be the case so far. Yeah. As has tended to be the case where we talk about an Australian side and we sound pretty hopeful and excited, but then we get to the New Zealand side and just realize, gee, there's some real talent here. This week, talking about the Highlanders, their record of 8 wins from 14 appearances is the second worst out of the New Zealand sides, which is pretty impressive when you're winning more than half. But that's including a final loss in the Trans-Tasman comp where they went down 23-15 to the Blues. So they really improved from the Super Rugby Aotearoa competition where I think they finished in around fourth, maybe even fourth or fifth in that comp, around the bottom with the Hurricanes. They sort of rallied and showed that they were quite hard to beat in this competition. One of the things that probably excited most was that first game, Reds versus Highlanders. I think after the Super Rugby AU final, there was no gap or week break between the two. So a few Reds fans were quite excited, thinking, gee, we might go over and do a job on them. But very quickly worked out there's quite a gap between the Australian and New Zealand sides, especially without any rest. So the Highlanders, pretty much I'd say, were the team that sort of set the foundation for how strong this Aotearoa side of the competition was and how damaging the Trans-Tasman and potentially the Pacific competition could be. 38 from 14, would you call that a success for this Highlander side, having seen the team?
Yeah, I think definitely that's a good innings from them. I'll flag as well, I think even just you can imagine what we saw on Instagram, how much the Reds blokes were on the piss, how much they would have been in actuality if Instagram got to see the small snippets of it all. So I think, and then they also did not play their full strength team. So I think that game was a little bit blown out of proportion. And I think the markets from the start had Highlanders favourite on the presumption that the Reds would be hurting a little bit, despite Highlanders what came fourth in the, they come fourth or last fourth in the Aotearoa.
My memory is
the Hurricanes.
Yeah. I thought they'd be Hurricanes, but also thought it was only a 7-match win streak for the Reds. So,
yeah. But so I think that's a good start for them. Their team is always a team that never looks like it's going to compete with the likes of Crusaders and Blues on paper. And then every time they play, they compete. And you wonder how they do it and you wonder why. Some other teams can't, but they've got very good sort of defensive culture. And I think they sort of benefit from, in a way, the same thing that the Brumbies benefit from in Canberra, quiet town, not much stuff happens. They all get to hang out all the time. Same as Dunedin, quiet, not too much happens. A lot of people aren't from Dunedin. They all travel down and live together and have that sort of probably a bit better environment, more conducive to playing rugby rather than going out and about in Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne and probably having a little bit too much fun.
I think having been to Dunedin, there's definitely that sort of element there. We'll confirm they did come fourth. That Aotearoa table was really split with every team winning at least two and every team losing at least two. So it was a nice sort of balanced competition. I'm very keen to see how they stack up this year. They've lost a bit of talent. So looking at the, I guess, squad as a whole, not only do they have a bit of talent that have left the team, but they've also got two really influential players that are injured for what's looking like the whole season. So out of the front rowers that won't be with them anymore, we've got Siate Tokalahi and Ash Dixon, two really, I think, pivotal mainstays of the Highlanders pack, joined by Jack Regan, who had a season with them playing in the locks, as well as three really impressive back rowers from last year. Te Ariki, Ben Nicholas, Kazuki Himeno, and Liam Squire. So some big names in the forwards going. You look at the backs, not as many big names, but I think probably two pivotal losses. Josh Iwani, Tim O'Malley, Michael Collins, Josh Morby, Frieden Vahakolo, and Nehe Miloskutter all leave the team. And just before I get your thoughts, I'll throw in that Jonah Nareki and Parry Parkinson, two, I guess, guaranteed starters, in my opinion, will be out for the whole season as well. It's a massive outlist, and it does make me think that it's going to be hard for them to replicate the form of 2021. But, Cody, from that list, who's the biggest loss?
It's tough to say because I would say Liam Squire, but didn't play last year, so not too material. Josh Uwani is probably the biggest loss, but also from memory, he missed the start of the season last year as well, or missed a fair chunk of games and came back and made a bit of an impact as well. So this is a team where it doesn't, I don't know, I sort of feel like they can put on whoever and they'll perform the same. Yeah. So I think Michael Collins has been, he's what, 2 or 3 years there, and he was consistent with the Blues, consistent with the Highlanders. They just make players play well. Ash Dixon probably had his best year ever last year and then left. So, yeah. But I thought before then, Coltman was probably should have started, but then Dixon played well last year. So much of a muchness there. I don't think the Highlanders are losing anyone sort of too convincing. If you look at the sheet, Milner, Scudder and Squire are the two biggest names, but they didn't play last year. So
I think
played very little.
I think I sort of hinted with the injuries. Jonathan Nyrick is, to me, easily the biggest loss because he was the player in the back line that I got the most excited about. I think he was, I mean, not that this is the be-all end-all, but he was probably the first Highlander drafted when we were doing these, maybe between him or, you know, Frizzell and McAuley too. But just someone that was really exciting every time he touched the ball. And without him in the team, the back line looks a lot less dangerous. And not that there's, you know, no exciting players there. There's a lot of people that could deliver, but there's no one that has delivered. There's a lot of people that we're sort of waiting to see if they can step onto the scene and step up, you know, to fill that void. Because you look at some of the players they have had in the outside backs, whether it be Waisaki Naholo or Ben Smith or Patrick Osborne, they've had some really damaging backs. And you get the feeling that without Jono Nareki, there's not the same level of threat from them. But in the group of players joining the squad, we do have a few backs. So we can have a look at how some of them might fit in. In the front row, we're joined by two props and two hookers. And I'm actually really excited by this group here. Luca Inch is coming in as All Blacks cover, just while De Groot takes his time coming back in. But they've signed Saul Lamau, who's going to be probably one of the biggest props in the competition, on top of Andrew Macaleo from the Crusaders and Reece Marshall, who I think had spent a bit of time at the Chiefs, but was overseas for a bit before. I might be thinking another Marshall, but really exciting group of players there. Sam Caird, who was at the Waratahs, comes across very eager to get a start with a few back rowers in Gareth Evans, Sam Fishley, Max Hicks, and Christian Leo-Willie joining the group. I think Sean Withey's come in as well to try and fill those voids because they did lose a lot of back rowers, but they've also got Shannon Frizzell on All Black sleeve as well. So plenty of players in, not too many big names yet, but as we get to the backs, they're going to get their fan favorite back. Sean Withey comes in, as we mentioned before, Nathan Hastie, one of the halfbacks, Marty Banks. The legend has returned from stints in Russia and Italy to hopefully try and don the 10 jersey again. But on top of that, two pretty exciting outside backs. One, Mosesi Dewai, who's played quite well in the NPC. But then also Veroniki Tikoa Solomone, who's come in for Sio Tomkinson. So again, another injury that's forced a late call-up to the squad. But Tikoa Solomone has been really damaging and I think has sort of the skill, speed and size to create a few headaches if he does get game time. Even though I see him probably as more of a wing cover than center, it probably goes to show where they were looking to play Tomkinson this year. From that list, Curdy, who is the most exciting inclusion?
Marty Banks, hands down, because yeah. he'll get one. This will probably be his farewell season, I'm guessing. He'll get a game at the end where they'll put him on the bench and he'll have a farewell tour at home or something. So that'll be the most exciting. But I don't know. I'm excited for Sam Caird, but Andrew McAleo is the biggest, I think, in terms of influence. It'll be interesting to see. Like, you always wonder how much players benefit from playing in such a good pack in the Crusaders, whether they can leave and have the same impact. So maybe he could be the type of player that's a bit overhyped because of how good the team was he was playing around, but he was very exciting at the Crusaders.
I think that's definitely something I'm keen to see. Is I think anyone can look good if you're coming on with, you know, Joe Moody and Alalotoa either side of you, or even if it's a reserve, you've got George Bauer and Ollie Jaeger, as well as an engine room of All Blacks pushing behind you. It does make a massive difference. But just given his size, I'm very keen to see how he goes, especially given we've seen the likes of Asafa Amua and Samisoni Takiaho really deliver on that big ball running hooker role. He could definitely fit that sort of same mold for the Highlanders. I did want to just go back and clarify. So Reece Marshall's going to be competing for that hooker jersey as well. He did play for the Chiefs, probably more excitingly, and maybe something for any of the draft rugby or fantasy fans. He played for Munster in 81 games and scored 15 tries along the way. So that's pretty good return for a hooker. Obviously a bit of, you know, forward dominance and a rolling maul sort of expectation at Munster, but not a bad thing to have under his belt, you wouldn't think. I think just looking at that, there's not many changes. And yet, while trying to make the best 23, I did struggle for certain positions, especially the back line, trying to work out who fit the bill, I guess, best. They got a lot of versatile players and a fair few that missed last year with injury. So it does make it hard to see, well, who's in form and who's going to be selected. But going through what I consider to be their best 23, I've got Ethan de Groot fresh off his All Blacks sort of season with Liam Coltman and Jermaine Ainsley. So a front row that's got test caps across the board is pretty handy and not something that the Highlanders have boasted consistently before. Behind them, I've got Bryn Evans and Josh Dixon with a back row of Shannon Frizzell, James Lynchies, and Marino Michele too. The Lynchies inclusion was a bit easier because Harmon's going to be out for the start of the season. And picking Evans and Dixon helped because there was no Perry Parkinson. But Cody, that forward pack, is there someone else you want to see in there? Or are you pretty happy with that lot?
I'd probably start Ked over probably Bryn Evans. I really like Bryn Evans last year, but isn't he 37 or something?
Yeah.
36. He's well on his way. So I'd probably start Ked. He would have been signed for a good reason over there. And I think he's a great player. But I think I'm not sold on Lenties. I hate to say it, but it's almost nice to say it in a way as well. I reckon that could be the least impressive forward pack in Super Rugby this year.
Wow. Huge call.
Which, massive.
And we just finished talking about the Tars.
Yeah. Well, I'm so high-spirited after talking about that. But you look at, usually you go, well, you're intimidated by every All Black pack that comes out. And that one, I think, is, like, I was, the Force pack is, I think, well, I think all the Wallabies packs with probably a little bit of bias, a bit more exciting. Well, sorry, all the Australian packs are a bit more exciting. And certainly that's not close to the packs that the Chiefs, Blues, or Crusaders can push out. So it's not to say that they're bad. Frizzell and Michele too will still run over pretty much everyone in their way and the All Black front row. But yeah,
the bold
call for the night.
Yeah, no, I like it. We need a few bold calls. We're just going to make sure everyone that was listening got through 45 minutes of Waratahs. Terrible. But I think one of the things that always sticks out with the Highlanders is they have never picked what I've considered the best team. And they also seem to chop and change a fair bit as well. So I think whoever's listening, if you're not impressed by the team, don't worry. It's nearly definitely not going to get picked. But it's an interesting point. They don't have the star-studded sort of forward pack that a lot of the other New Zealand teams have, nor do they have that much exciting youth coming in. So it's not the worst call I've ever heard. But we'll see how they go against the Australian size and we might change our tune then. In the back line, obviously Aaron Smith's in there, but deputising him on the bench is Folau Fakatava. So they've got some really nice depth there. I've got Mitch Hunt at 10 with Thomas Umanga Jensen and Fatuli Paya in the centres. Connor Garden-Bachop on the left wing, Nani Punavai on the right wing, and Solomoni Alamalo on fullback. I think that's, you know, as close as I can get to an exciting back line. I think that's probably got, for me, the mix of athleticism and speed and, you know, excitement with ball, but also a fair bit of size in the center combination as well. I know it looks very different to the team they had last year, but we did obviously have the injuries to Connor Garden-Bachop, Manga Jensen and Pyre, as well as the break for Alamalo just for personal reasons as well. So it's hard to gauge what that team would look like at full strength. Because you've had a look at the squad and had a go through some of the players. Is there anyone else that you can see getting some minutes? And don't say Scott Gregory.
Yeah, I was going to say Scott Gregory.
Yeah.
Over Pyre. I think he'll probably start in the 13 jersey. And I'll probably just swap Connor Garden-Bachop and Alamalo around, have Bachop at fullback and Alamalo on the wing.
Yeah, and no issue with that. And that's sort of what we touched on before. A lot of those players could be playing in other positions. And I was really struggling to work out who to put where, especially looking at other players in the squad. I think I've still got Villamoni Koroi and Sam Gilbert. They could very easily slot into wing or fullback. Scott Gregory, as you mentioned before, he's played outside centre, wing and fullback for them already. They've got players that could sort of fit across the board. I think they've also brought in...
He played Josh 12 as well, I think, last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest losses we didn't mention really is Michael Collins. He was someone that did surprisingly well. And I think, you know, probably deserved a bit more credit than he got for gelling the team together. So how they put that backline together is going to be really interesting. I definitely don't think we'll see that backline week one, but that's the one I want to see just because I think that's the most exciting team they can name. And that's what I want to see them do is build this team into something that can be pretty long-term because this is all a group of young guys outside of Aaron Smith. And they could get a real nice sort of run of seasons together. On the bench, I put Andrew McAleo, Aiden Johnston, Josh Honeck, Manaki Selby-Rickett, Hugh Renton, Falau Fakatava, Marty Banks, and Sam Gilbert. But we've sort of covered everyone. Like, they could have any number of combinations on there. We've been talking about McAleo, and he might not even make the 23, given the sort of resume that Coltman and Marshall have. So, whole heap of options. I guess what it comes down to now, looking at the one we're most excited for, I'll just start this off because he let me down last year, is Michele Tu'u. I think he's a damaging number eight. He played a lot of six this year in the Mitre 10 Cup. But for me, he just sort of took the foot off the accelerator a bit and got overtaken by Hugh Renton. So missed out on a lot of the back end of the season last year. To me, he should be selling. He's a freak player and someone that I think should be getting some bulk minutes. And in my view, would be playing the full 80 each week. I think he's tried to turn that around with a really dominant NPC performance. So for me, I'm just hoping that the coaches have seen that and reward him with the time. Cody, who are you excited to see from this team?
It's the obvious one and the boring one, but Smith.
Yeah.
I think him in this team makes the team look like they can play finals, I think. Yeah. And he's the same answer for the injury hole. He'll be their captain. Well, he is their captain. I think he's already been announced. And he's the best player by far in this team.
Yeah.
So I'm most excited to see him. And he can, like, he seems to play better the worse his team is or the less experienced the players around him are. And he obviously makes all the players way better than they would be in other teams. So I'm keen to see what he does again.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. They've actually got a well-rounded squad in that the difference between the starters and bench doesn't seem to be massive in many of the positions. But I would just say that Ethan de Groot, he's really emerged as a pretty dominant loosehead prop. So I think if they lose him, they do have Aiden Johnston, but that does seem like it's a bit of a step down now. And also Mitch Hunt. You know, losing Josh Iwani, they used to really be able to rely on having either of them at 10 and the other at 12 if they needed two playmakers. I can't see them putting Banks and Hunt on the field at the same time. I don't think that would be the best fit for the team. And at the same time, if they'd lose Hunt, Banks is quite old and probably doesn't have the pace you'd want from a fly half. So we'll see how that goes. I think he could end up being a pretty pivotal player for the team this year. Fitting that we've done these two teams together, because I think the Highlanders and Waratahs have a pretty storied rivalry. And I think, you know, normally enjoy a pretty good preseason hit out together. I've opted to put the Highlanders at seventh, one above the Waratahs, just because I think they're going to be in a pretty similar position in the New Zealand side of things. I think they're going to have a pretty strong 15, but I'm not convinced they're going to go the whole way with that 15. I think there might be a few rests for the All Blacks in there, and they don't have that many All Blacks. So it's going to be really key how they use their players. But for me, I still see them being better than the bulk of the Australian teams. And really, they don't need to do much more than that to get into the finals, given we take 8. So to me, I see them being probably the worst of the New Zealand teams this year, but still being good enough to scrape in the top 8. Is that how you're seeing things as well, Cody?
Yeah, I think so. But I also don't want to put them at 7th because I don't think they're a 7th team. But if you think the other 4 Kiwi teams, the Reds and Brumbies would be, yeah, I'd say they're definitely in front. And then I'd say anything goes, I'd be leaning towards sort of Force and Tars being at least on par with the Highlanders, I think. And Rebels, you never know. But I think between the Force, Tars, Rebels and Highlanders, whoever's the least injured will probably benefit the most. But you think Highlanders having all their Kiwi games at the start, they're probably going to get bashed a bit, probably more prone to injury, getting thumped in those faster pace, heavier contact games. And then coming over, maybe they'll be a bit more exhausted. Maybe some of the Aussie teams will be a bit fresher. So it's a tough one, but I think it's probably the least exciting the Highlanders team have looked. And if they make the finals, I don't think they'll go into the top 4.
It is tough for them because I think, as you say about the injuries, a lot of young players are quite prone to an injury here or there, and they've got a very young team outside of a few players. So doing the average age, they actually come up with, I think, the highest average age out of any team. But when you consider that that's including Liam Coltman, who's 32, Bryn Evans, who's 37, James Lynch is 31, Aaron Smith, 33, Andrew McAleo, 30, Josh Honeck, 36, and Marty Banks, 32. That's a lot of early to mid-30s in that team that's sort of balancing out the rest of them. I will say one of the stats that's probably most intriguing, out of all 10 Australian and New Zealand teams, they have the lowest average international caps per player. So looking at the team, I mean, Aaron Smith has 102 caps. Between the rest of them, we've got 27. Yeah. So it's really not an experienced team, especially when you consider the nature of some of those caps. You know, Ainsley, they were for the Wallabies ages ago. Coltman hasn't played for the All Blacks in a long time. Bryn Evans hasn't played for the All Blacks in even longer. Fatuli Paya, his 2 caps are not for the New Zealand team at all. So I think that makes a big difference. We'll see how they go depth-wise. But really, if you made it this far, there's one reason why you're listening. It's for the draft. We're trying to get 3 players from each team to see how they would go in the draft. And ideally, we want players that draft pretty early. So we'll head back to the Waratahs. Probably one very obvious answer here, Cody. Who's going to be one of the Waratahs players you're looking to take in those first few rounds?
Top 3? What are we just going, 1 or 3, or how many do you want?
How about you give all 3, and I'll give all 3 for the Highlanders.
I could give you 23.
Yeah. 3 tiles. I was expecting that.
I'll go Bell, Hooper, Parisi.
Nice. Bell, Hooper, Parisi. I think that looks pretty good. The fact that we're still not even mentioning HJH in that lot, Jake Gordon, Will Harrison had a really nice average. Like, they've actually got a very good fantasy team. They do a lot of the attacking stuff well, so I'm very keen to see how they go. And I think you're pretty on the money with those 3. Another co-host who might be listening, Cody, would you be putting Angus Bell as a first pick option?
As in 1 out of 1 or first round?
No, the first pick.
I would be taking him first round. First pick.
Okay. Just wanted to check that. So, Northy, you know what to do. For the Highlanders, a few options here. Touched on before, Nareki would have been if it weren't for the injury. I think Frizzell, Smith, and De Groot all go relatively early. De Groot as a bit of a smoky, just because I think he actually does a lot of the hard work stuff quite well and probably isn't a household name just yet, despite being an All Black. But obviously, Shannon Frizzell's going to be one of the best sixers in the competition. Aaron Smith, you know, he's a centurion All Black. What more do you want? But De Groot, I think, offered something quite different. In that he's probably going to get a lot more minutes than you'd expect and is quite an exciting option. So, I mean, for me, pretty happy to have any of those on my team. And Makalia would be in there if he was guaranteed to start. I'm very excited by him. Cody, I think that about wraps it up. I think we were slightly heavier to the Waratah side of the minutes, but that's to be expected. We had to do a bit of fact-checking to see how long the streak over the Reds were and, yeah, just admire the Tars singlet and Tars polo that we're rocking at the moment. Any final thoughts about these two teams before we wrap up?
No, I'm keen just to see trials and see these are two teams where the back line, well, some of the positions are pretty contentious. So I'm keen to see how they play out actually. And he's praying that there can be a Kiwi team that finishes outside the top eight.
Yeah, I think that's a nice note to leave on. Let's hope the Highlanders are that team. We'll take any team, but yeah, if we can get a Kiwi team to not make the finals, that would be a massive win for Australian rugby. So thank you for listening.